Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, we are recording. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest. His name is Paul Kudenek. His last name is spelled C-U-D-E-N-E-C, and he's just published a book. Highly recommend it. The title of it is The Great Racket, The Ongoing Development of the Criminal Global System. And this is not his first book. He also wrote Fascism Rebranded, Exposing the Great Reset. And he has a lot of information here I haven't seen. I think his perspective comes more from the continent or Europe. But I'm delighted that he agreed to the interview. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So for people who might not have heard your name, can you talk about your background and what led you to put together The Great Racket?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm English born, though I live in France now. I worked for many years as a journalist, just a humble local journalist, but at the same time was interested in the wider world beyond the immediate local area that I was covering and for my job. And I've always written political articles, but 10 years ago I started taking it a step further and really have been doing that full time. I gave up the day job, as they say, and I've actually written I think it's 11 or 12 books
over the last 10 years.
But some of them are more about philosophy. I was involved in the anarchist movement in the UK for many years. I've sort of been excommunicated since for about the last 3 years because I'd not been towing the official line. So to start with, I was writing more about that, about history, more of a not particularly connected to what was actually happening in the real world. But gradually, I've become dragged into that and sort of turned more back into a journalist than a philosopher or general political writer.
Right. Considering these events, so many important things are happening in the most recent, two or three years. Can you kind of talk about your book, Fascism Rebranded, and kind of The Great Reset? Because I think it leads into The Great Racket.
It does, yeah. Like the current book, that it was a collection of essays that had already appeared on the internet. But so when you put them together, in both cases, it gives a different picture. It's not just bits and bobs that randomly describe different phenomena. It's, you can see that there's a thread. And Fascism Rebranded started with I was talking about fascism, about historical fascism. And gradually coming to the conclusion through my reading that what we're experiencing today, and this was even before COVID, this authoritarian neoliberalism, is in fact, it is essentially the same thing as fascism. That it's not called fascism, and it hasn't got the trappings of fascism that we've come to expect, such as the nationalism or the sort of racial identity. Well, it has in a sort of back to front way,
right.
But it's and that fascism is very close to fascism was an authoritarian continuation of the sort of so-called liberal capitalism that was decided to enforce its rule more in a different way. And the in 2020, obviously, that my interest in that sort of area accelerated dramatically. I ended up reading, it's not a pleasant experience, I have to say. I read three books written by Klaus Schwab of the WEF and realized that he's basically pushing a fascist agenda. If you use the word fascist, by the way, it's not just fascist. It's an authoritarian, plutocratic agenda that is not at all interested in democracy and regards the population of the world as just subjects to be exploited and shunted around for the benefit of the people with all the power and the money.
Right. I mean, and they've done well to avoid using the term fascist. I mean, here in the States, I think that we have a fascist government where there's an obvious fusing of economic power and the state. I mean, I think you even write in your book that the economic powers have even controlled the state, like it's flipped. So the state doesn't have power over these capitalistic entities, but in fact, it's the opposite, right?
Yeah. I mean, the state has become the tool with which they can impose their desires on the rest of us. They've got the legal backing, you know. I mean, the state has been taken over by criminals, basically, who then redefine what they do as legal and what people who they don't like do as illegal. And also that, you know, they use virtue signaling to suggest that their agenda is the good one. You know, it's always this sort of rainbow colors and the happy smiley face associated with everything they're pushing. Whereas if you go against it, you know, all the smears come out, your reactionary conspiracy theories, right wing, you know, anything that makes you sound bad.
They use that label here in the States a lot, far right. So if you disagree with them, you're very close or alt-right. They like to smear you with that or something like that. But it is interesting. The trappings of the great fascists, they've improved. So instead of having marches and meetings at night with torches, it is this kind of there's a psychological element with the kind of, you know, happy-go-lucky multicolored flags of fascism is kind of a better upgrade, like a fascism 2.0. I think they're more effective at convincing people that they're not involved in just rapacious money grubbing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, exactly. It's just camouflage. It's a lie, actually. It's a massive, whopping lie.
Yeah, it's a total deception. Right. So, we're kind of in the Schwab. You've endured three of his books, this kind of fourth turning or whatever. But it really is, like you said, like the title of your book, it's a racket, right? Like, it doesn't have that desire. I mean, I think the average person is now a human resource. They're kind of not viewed as a independent entity. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and they, you know, and the term human resource has been used for a long time, but they also use human capital, which says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And that's an interesting term, too. One of the terms I learned in your book, which I wasn't really, I think maybe I've heard it one or two times, is impact capitalism. Can you define that?
It's very important, actually, and quite complicated to get your head around if you haven't come across it before. There's an American writer called Alison McDowell who's done a lot of work on that, and I learned a lot from her. Basically, it's a new market for the global economy, in which people and their lives have become the commodities. Impact investment is investing, putting money into activities that will have an impact on people's lives, is the idea. It's closely related to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which set out all the categories in which impact can be had, such as in, you know, combating gender discrimination or racial discrimination and the sort of fake green environmentalism comes into that as well. So private speculators can put money into improving somebody's life, and by putting improving in quote marks there, because you know, I don't really believe that that's what they're doing, but these then become commodities in the same way as mortgages can become commodities, you know, with the crash back whenever that was,
2008, 2007.
Yeah. Well, that was the bundles of mortgages that were that caused the problem, that weren't worth what they said they were, and people's lives generally are to be collected, bundled together as targets of investment and of speculation. Which apparently this is where the real money is going to come, is from trading and speculating on these on this human capital.
It's incredible. Yeah. So you're basically like a cow in a cow pasture or something that these people, you mentioned a guy, Ronald Cohen, these people can speculate on and try to so-called improve, but make money off at the same time. Right.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what it's all about. He doesn't really disguise that. Cohen calls it impact capitalism. And yeah, it's another way of making money. But in order to have this, impact investment and measuring the outcomes of this money in order to enable them to play their games on the with the trading and so on, they have to be able to measure everything about people's lives. So if a child is seen as being in a disadvantaged classification or at an intersection of several disadvantages, perhaps, which is a link to this intersectionality idea, which is so popular in certain parts of the left. But in order to measure whether their investments are going to pay dividends or their points are going to rise because of their actions, everything has to be measured all the time, which is why everything has to be online, and children's education has to be online. Everything we do has to be recorded on blockchain or whatever it is they use. I mean, I'm not technically proficient to describe exactly how it happens, but it all has to be measurable. And they talk about that a lot, about things being measurable outcomes and so on. So it's all interlinked. It's this is the sort of fourth industrial revolution of smart cities, of digital enslavement, in my opinion, is very much aligned with both impact capitalism and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Right. So the SDGs, right, is the acronym for all that. And it goes back. So it's not just kind of like one of the insights I think I got from your book is it's not just coming out of Switzerland and Schwab. Prince Charles was actually the real person who launched the Great Reset. Is that true or not?
Yeah, he officially launched it. They chose him to launch it. And I was quite surprised to see that. I don't think it was reported in some of the British media at the time, but because I mean, up until then I'd been focusing more on Klaus Schwab and the sort of fascist continental European fascist link, and then suddenly it was my focus was turning more to Britain and to the British Empire, which is now rebranded the Commonwealth. And I saw a lot of the traits that I noticed elsewhere as having their origins in the British Empire, even including this whole lie of doing good. That was always the excuse for Britain going around taking over other countries all across the world and stealing people's resources. Well, it was an improvement. We were helping these poor people, lifting them out of poverty and bringing them into the civilized world and the rest of it. So the hypocrisy goes very deep.
Right. And so this new king, he hasn't even been properly enthroned, right? But he is you think that he's kind of going back to kind of more older imperial or empire view of his status as the king. Do you agree with, is that what's happening?
I'm not sure. I don't think he's going back. No, I think he's always been there. In fact, that it's been kept under the surface. People have always, and then Queen Elizabeth was much loved by the public in Britain, virtually beyond criticism. But I think Charles is a more controversial character, so perhaps it's possible to criticize him in a different way. But I mean the way into
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Discovering his role after the fact that he launched the Great Reset was to look at his network of organizations under his name. I don't really think it's him personally, to be honest, but I think he's more of a figurehead for the financial interests of the City of London, which are closely related to the British monarchy and the crown. But he's been used, his name, the prince's charities, all these prince's trusts, and I've put them all in the article. It is a vast network, and it's all they're right. all the partners in them, apart from obviously he's linked to the WEF, or he wouldn't have launched the Great Reset. But the partners are all the same companies that you see in all on the lists of, you know, the list of partners of all these global institutions. There's always the same names keep cropping up. There's banks and arms traders and, you know, all the
right. Rest. Google, Facebook, all these big nine time players. McKinsey pops up. McKinsey popped up too in the whole vaccine hesitancy. They did tons of papers for some of these companies to just get people to take as much of these shots as possible. But they pop up under him too, under soon to be King Charles III. And I mean, so they're going to like have all this humanitarian nomenclature, humanitarian statements while they're just trying to make as much money as possible. And some of these things are kind of creepy, like vibe check. They're going to like check your vibe on your phone for the kids. So they've got some serious plans to put people right in line in the whole hierarchy, the social, you know, what do you call it? The class system, really. It's kind of a digital class system. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's an updating of a very old system of exploitation, and the imperialism of the British well, the British Empire has just taken on a different form, an updated form. They're very pleased. When I went, I did a separate article actually on the Commonwealth and the history of the Commonwealth, and they're always very pleased about the number of people under their control. You know, the quantity of the human cattle, the human capital that they own, and, you know, the age group as well, because there's a lot of young people in Africa and India and so on. So it's just a continuation of
of what's been going on. Like it's the king overlooking his subjects, right? How close do you think that, for example, you know, we get here in the States, I get tons of news from Trudeau in Canada. We hear about Australia. How much influence do you think those members of the Commonwealth are being influenced by the royal family or Charles or Elizabeth? Do you think they're in lockstep, or are they independent? What do you think that the nature of those huge, you know, nations are within the Commonwealth?
Well, I think that the last couple of years, well, those 3 years, have revealed that they're very much under the control of the British crown, the British Empire. That's what I don't really think it's the individuals in the royal family who are directing this. They're just going along with it and being used by the great racket, as I called it, Another writer, Ian Davis, describes this, well, I think he's talking about the same thing, as the global public-private partnership, which, again, links back to this fascism idea.
Right.
But Canada and Australia and New Zealand were among the worst for the COVID restrictions. They pushed it further than they did in Britain.
Right.
Trudeau
is kind of like you want to talk about a fascist leader or something like it. I mean, you want to talk about a perfect example of kind of like the pleasant image on a fascist leader. That I think Trudeau exemplifies that, like he is a kind of theater kid or whatever. But I mean, he brought out the horses, kicked people off, went after their bank accounts, incredible stuff. Yeah. So we really saw incredible things in the last 3 years, like astonishing. But I mean, this isn't really it. I mean, you also write about how this this kind of reset kind of thing that happened. You actually argue that World War One was kind of like this, something similar, where there were crimes against humanity in an attempt to kind of upgrade the global system. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I got the information from reading various books, two books in particular by some Scottish writers, a pair of Scottish writers, Doherty and McGregor, Jerry Doherty and Jim McGregor, who'd gone into very detailed research on the build up and the continuation of the First World War. And it's quite clear from what they write, and you know, and through having read around it, just to back up what they were saying and make sure they weren't making it all up, you know, I did a bit of reading. It's quite clear that there was a deliberate agenda to provoke a war that would benefit those who'd planned it in a number of different ways. There was the immediate obvious way they could make money was that they were the people that owned the arms trade. So obviously big payday if there's a war. I mean, on both sides of the war, this is the other thing. They were making money out of the German arms as well as the Allied arms manufacturer and sales, and oil suppliers and things. They supplied the same interests. Supplied a lot of the raw materials and resources that are burnt up in a great war like that without anybody asking any questions. And they also were involved in lending the money to the governments to enable them to wage these wars, which is very lucrative, and lending money for the rebuilding, the Build Back Better after the war, and also which is what you were referring to there. I think that the war was this launching pad into a new kind of society, the post-war period rather than the pre-war, that people had to accept that things weren't going to be the way they were before. And in one of Schwab's books, he talks about with some relish about the idea that the COVID was going to be one of those similar moments. After this was the Great Reset book, that people in the future would be talking about pre-COVID and post-COVID. So you can see that you can't see directly that it was pre-planned just from that statement, but you can see that certainly they aim to use these big moments in order to push their agenda, to accelerate their agenda in a way that they wouldn't get away with necessarily, you know, in a normal time, because they come under scrutiny and people don't like it and have protests. And so it's these moments of fascistic control, imposure of control, that enable them to advance beyond what would have previously been thought possible.
Right. I think that happens in all of us. I think that's World War II in the States and the Imperial Wars here, all the way up to 2001, Iraq. The same type of people benefited.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even in Ukraine right now, too, right?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. It's. I mean, I very much see the same sort of things happening there. Like, I mean, such as the involvement of BlackRock in the in rebuilding Ukraine after the war. You know, it's just, I almost laughed out loud when I thought, well, laughed in a sort of despairing way. You know, it's not funny at all. It's grotesque and vile. You know.
But, right. So they'll make money building it up and tearing it down and then building it up. So they're just parasitical forces. It's really incredible. I mean, people really don't understand some of these malignant forces underneath the surface. They don't get it.
No,
States.
No, it's difficult to face up to. It's difficult for people to believe. I mean, sometimes it's difficult for me, and I've been a critic of this sort of setup for many years now, but you know, and also in Ukraine, no doubt they'll be wanting to build when they build back better, they'll be building smart cities and all that infrastructure, you know. So it's that'll help modernize the world according to their specifications.
Right. I mean, these are very dangerous, these smart cities, and they're starting to do the tester. People said it was never going to happen in the States. They're doing it in Ohio here right now. So. And I think Oxford in the UK, so they're starting to pop up. Can you talk about the danger of this kind of smart city implementation?
Yeah. Well, yeah, at the moment, they're pretending that it's not to do with smart cities. It's just sort of traffic management and reducing car use. But I don't think anyone's going to – I mean, well, some people will fall for it. A lot of people aren't falling for it now because we've seen what happened during the lockdowns in COVID, and we've seen that they wanted to bring in these vaccine passports and total surveillance and control. So there's been a reaction in the UK, particularly a lot of demonstrations. Yeah, Oxford was the latest big one against these 15-minute cities and –
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18+. Neighborhoods. But the agenda for smart cities is there. You know, nobody could deny that. And the United Nations produced a brochure a few months ago that I wrote about in the book, actually, in the collection of essays, which was called Centering People in Smart Cities. That's what they want to center people. So for a start, you know, they're not talking about people deciding to go and live in smart cities. They are going to impose that on people. They are going to center you. And then when you think what the word center means, well, it's pretty much the same in that context as concentrate. They want to concentrate people in smart cities. So it's concentration camps, maybe digital concentration camps.
Yeah, and now they have the capacity to really data mine people and get some. They already are doing it to everybody. They have data on everybody. But just imagine being in one place where they can just treat you like a farm animal, like a piece of husbandry. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Especially, yeah, so, I mean, super dangerous. They're not smart. They're smart for the people, the aristocrats or whatever, top of the food chain, so to speak. But for everybody else, it'd be a nightmare. I mean,
yeah, smart is in itself an acronym with I can't remember it exactly, but it's got monitoring in there somewhere. You know, it stands for something, but it happens to also mean intelligent. But that's not the real meaning.
Right. I mean, everything is Orwellian two-faced terms, right? People have to be totally concerned about. And you kind of go into some of these old names. I mean, what's your thought on, like, are the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, are they as influential as people say? Is that a hobgoblin? Is that theoretical, or are they having an impact upon current world events?
I asked myself that question a few months ago and read a lot about particularly about the Rothschilds, and I come to the very inconvenient conclusion that they are very much involved in it. I say inconvenient because, of course, the moment you start saying things like that, you're an insane anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist. But I mean, I'm not. I don't think it's all Jewish people are involved in it, of course. Or, you know, that it makes it harder to criticize the Rothschilds because they're Jewish. But other than that, it's not, you know, it's neither here nor there. It's the fact that they have built up an immense wealth and power, which they have also sought to conceal because they've realized that people might not take kindly to the idea that they own so much and dominate so much. So they've carefully constructed lots of facades and fronts behind which they hide. I mean, I read two books solely on the Rothschilds, one in English and one in French. Both by respectable historians, you know. The one in English is by Neil Ferguson. He pronounces his name Neil, who's a sort of British historian that appears on the television from time to time and is, you know, not very controversial. But he had access to the Rothschilds records. You have to read carefully what he writes, because he's sort of sometimes he says, "Oh well, that was in their heyday back in the 19th century, and then after that their power waned." But then if you read through to the end, he does a sort of update on where they are now, and he's basically saying, "Oh yeah, you know, they were still involved in privatization in the 1980s with Mrs. Thatcher, and they're still involved in this and that." And then with my own research, I saw that they were. It was an article, I think, in the New York Times, an American newspaper anyway, about 10 years ago, I think. And they were talking about one of the latest, youngest members of the Rothschild dynasty, who was making significant investments in Ukraine, strangely enough.
Interesting. Interesting.
So, you know, draw your own conclusions. Mm.
Right. So they're still around. I mean, I've seen a picture. I think I forgot was one member of the Rothschild family. He was talking to Prince Charles like Prince Charles was his lackey. Like he had his finger on his chest. I don't remember which member of the family it was. But these are fine. And that one of the Rothschilds is always around with Marina Abramovich. He's pictured with her and all these other. He pops up in strange places. Like I know that they're members of the family, but yeah, and I don't know if they're—I don't even know if they're real practicing Jews. I don't know if they're observant Jews. I mean, they may have been Jewish, and I know that they, you know, they marry Gentiles and stuff like that. So I don't know. I don't know if it's—they're really that, like, you know, whatever, strict about their.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire? Huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just, I would say that they couldn't believe in any religious faith, because the religious faith has a, you know, is not based on lying and cheating and stealing, is it? You know.
Right. And I mean, it's interesting. One of the themes of your book is these people really think they're the best. They think that they've reached the apex of Darwinism. They're the top of the food chain or economic or racial, you know, hierarchy. But in fact, you argue the opposite, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
For me, they're just the fact that they're pursuing their own self-interest with complete disregard, I mean, totally callous disregard for the interests of others, whether it be their, you know, just the way they live, that the people, they're depriving people of their freedom, or they're destroying their environments to make more money from their industries, or starting wars to make money. I mean, you know, that if it, the very fact that a group of people could deliberately start wars in order to get richer, you know, which is, I think most people would accept that has happened at least once in history. But that places them for me, in the realm of, the closest that human beings can come to being evil. I mean, they're channeling evil. I mean, they're not, I'm not saying they're demons or the devil, but to, you know, their behavior has placed them in that situation of being able to be described as evildoers, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, and they don't have, they kind of seem on the forces of death. I think you write that, like, people don't realize that they are almost like vampires, like the kind of economic vampirism where they just try to extract as much energy through money through these people. Like, I think that's true. I mean, you, people have, you know, analogized them to vampires, but it's vampiric. A lot of these people, the way they operate through people and the way they put them into their corporations is really bad. And also their ability to convince the people that what they're doing is right, I think is a very powerful element of their power. Would you agree with that? Kind of fake realities?
Yeah, I mean, it always, I think it's always been essential, because people are basically decent, most people. And which is why I think that, you know, large numbers of our fellow citizens don't believe that these things are possibly happening that I describe. They don't think it's possible because they would never do that. You know, they're good people. They're kind. You know, they're not perfect, but they would never consider causing millions of deaths in order to increase the size of their bank account. They couldn't live with themselves. So it's easy for them, for the people in control to convince people that they're not doing what they're doing, because nobody, for most people, believe that it's not possible for any human being to do that. And then they add on, they really layer it on. As I was saying earlier, they layer it on with this virtue signaling and defining what they do as being good, and what people they don't agree with doing it as being bad. And even to the point of, you know, calling people fascists who oppose what they're doing, when they, in fact, they are the real fascists, even though it's not fascism, you know, Hitler style. It's not German nationalist fascism or Italian nationalist fascism, but it's everything we don't like about fascism.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think that the fascism is that the corporate interests control the governments. That's really it. I mean, I think that's the inversion of like a free and safe society, is when the corporations are telling the politicians what to do. And you can see it writ large with this whole vaccine scandal and stuff like that, because it plays into the whole Great Reset, the Great Racket, where these people are making money, poisoning people, giving out a product that doesn't work. That's by their own admission. I mean, it's incredible what they've done on a global level. And even Bill Gates himself, like the whole, you know, my foundation is helping humanity. It's the exact opposite. He's a total vampiric parasite. And people need to disabuse themselves that these are good people. I mean, it's really, we can do better. And that's really kind of another thing. Like, what the real thing is, that we could actually live a much better quality of life, a much happier, much more sense of fulfilling, if these people weren't around, right? Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, so what are your recommendations?
I think the most for how we might live differently, organize ourselves differently. I think decentralization is for me the key to it at the moment. Which to start with, I don't know how we would do that. That is the question, you know. But if we were in a position, in order to pursue any sort of policies, you know, just cutting off from the global control level would be the most essential one. They've just built up this infrastructure. When you think of with the United Nations and the IMF and the World Bank and the, you know, the Bank of International Settlements and the WHO and the rest of it, which is, you know, it's obviously it's becoming a de facto world government. So we've got the first step would be to pull back out of that, which I suppose would sound like I'm suggesting a sort of nationalism, but I'm not really, because I believed in taking decentralization further than that. I believe in democracy. Actually, we need to reverse the flow of power so that it comes from people, from the communities, and flows upwards where people cooperate at different levels, rather than having this top-down power which is just imposed on everybody by force, by lies, by all the means that they can. But how we'd actually make this happen is another question.
Right. I mean, I'm kind of an advocate of like getting back to the land, growing your own food, and then a lot of this stuff, like you, a lot of these things would wither on the vine if nobody acquiesced, if nobody agreed to kind of these things. I think it would change a lot of, you know, being kind of at the bottom of the pyramid. The pyramid would invert. I totally agree with you that, like, the capital state, the capital S state, is just way too big. And I mean, imagine being centralized. I mean, you say it's a de facto global government. I mean, it's even more detached. I mean, the WHO is trying to do a huge sovereignty power grab right now. I mean, it's just incomprehensible, the catastrophic effects of this type of things with this great racket going on, what they could do. They've already done it, really, by giving certain drugs and downplaying free drugs and things like that. They've already caused tremendous harm. And just, I mean, it's just not a great situation.
No, but at least people are becoming aware of the situation, which perhaps wasn't the case a few years ago.
I agree. John, we are at the 37-minute mark. Is there anything you'd like to add? I mean, there's a lot more in this book. We didn't even get to kind of some of the other chapters and some of the things. I highly recommend people check it out. This book is free, right?
Yeah, it's a PDF, yeah. It's from the Winter Oak site, which is winteroak.org.uk. And there's a number of them. And all the books, all my books are available as free PDFs that you can download, in fact. As well as some of them you can buy in hard copy form, and not that one, not the collections of essays, because the essays have already been on the internet, so it's a slightly different product. But
right, and people can get it and just read an essay at a time. You can get a lot of this information. You've done the research. It's there. I mean, and that website is where they can get your books. And you're on social media too, right? Like you're on Twitter. Do you have a website? That's the
a personal website. Okay. Paul, I'm on Substack as well. Paul Kudnack, Substack.
Okay.
And Twitter, it's at Winter Oak Press. So yeah.
So where's the best place if people have any follow up questions or anything or want to reach out to you? Where would you recommend they do that?
You can write to Winter Oak. Winteroak at greenmail.net. Or my email is Kudinek at riseup.net.
Kudinek. Last name is spelled Cudenec. Is there anything you'd like to add before we come to an end?
No, not really. I mean, we've covered quite a bit of ground. And there's obviously a lot more that could be said. But, yeah, thanks very much. That was a good conversation.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks a lot for agreeing to the interview again. Author's name is Paul Kudinek, Cudenec. We talked about his recent publication, The Great Racket, The Ongoing Development of the Criminal Global System. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, stay there. Stop this.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.